It's Central Time. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Rickard. You're with us on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Coming up on Central Time, we'll find out about a lost city that exists in UW-Madison's Arboretum. That's in today's installment of Curious Wisconsin.
First, the U.S. Senate has officially gone nuclear. Earlier today, Democrats pushed through rules changes to the filibuster for certain presidential appointees.
This so-called nuclear option has been brought up in the past, but never acted on until today. Some are calling it a momentous step for a Senate that's often slow to change. Others are saying it's politically risky and could come back to bite the Democrats.
Joining us now to explain what happened is Gregory Koger. He's an associate professor of political science at the University of Miami. Gregory, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you for having me.
So Democrats in the Senate have talked about doing this before, and at one point I believe Republicans did too, but why did it happen today?
Well, I think this is a culmination of a long process. As you mentioned, so the Republicans in 2003 to 2005 actually had a similar problem. The minority party was blocking their judicial nominees, and they eventually came up with a compromise. Over the last 3 years, oh, I'm sorry, 5 years, the Democrats have also been frustrated by the minority party and have sought reforms. But in the past, they've settled for, sort of minor incremental reforms or promises of good behavior or, getting that one thing that they wanted released, like a one nomination or one bill. So I think today's actions are very much the culmination of that process and like the culmination of all the frustration the Democrats have felt over the last 5 years, because there wasn't a lot of warning. So this wasn't like an attempt to sort of cow the Republicans into backing down on, these three nominations for the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals. It was, I think, really the decision that they were no longer going to play this game. And even if they had gotten the three nominations that they were fighting for today, I think the Democrats still would have, been sufficiently frustrated by everything that's occurred up to this point, but that they would have still wanted to go ahead and change the way the Senate works.
So under the new system, they can approve appointees with a majority, a simple majority. Who would this change apply to? Who would it not apply to?
It applies to all executive nominations. That means cabinet secretaries, lower-level executive branch nominations. And it also applies to federal district court judges and appellate court judges. So the only thing that's left, the only nominations that are still susceptible to a filibuster are Supreme Court nominations.
Republicans not happy about this happening. What kind of reaction have you seen from them so far?
The main talking point I've heard, well, two talking points. One is that they point out accurately that what today's actions exposes is that the rules of the Senate mean what a simple majority of the Senate say that they mean. And in that sense, it's a game in which the minority has no rights that can't be taken away. I think that's true. I think it was true yesterday, though. I mean, it's always been the case that the majority has this power. And so it has always been the case that the minority party should use its prerogatives in a way that the majority party will accept. And they have not done so. The current minority party has not done so in recent years.
On a wider perspective, a kind of a pro-con, there's been criticism of the Senate that it's slow, it's hard to get things done because of the filibuster rule. On the other hand, people say that's a good thing. It prevents a majority from running roughshod just because they've got 51 to R49. Do you have a feeling, good or bad, on this?
Yeah, I mean, in the context of the broader debate, I've been sort of a moderate. Like, I actually do appreciate the value of filibustering in terms of it's a mechanism for preserving real debate in the Senate, which doesn't occur in the House. And it is a way to, moderate legislation as it's moving through the House. I think there are two. But the other side of the argument is also quite strong. One is, which is, if you're using the power to obstruct just to tie up the Senate, just to keep anything from happening, just to slow everything down as much as possible to run out the clock, Then I think that senators who are doing that are abusing the privilege in a way that doesn't advance the collective interests of the United States. And the other thing is similarly, if it's just a tool of political party, if it's just a way to keep the other party from passing their agenda, from passing things that are popular or that would, you know, improve the country, because you don't want them to accumulate a record of accomplishments, then also I don't think that the power to obstruct is serving the greater interests of the country.
Congress hasn't been noteworthy for bipartisan collaboration and collegiality lately. Does this make that even worse?
Probably. I mean, yes, almost certainly, right? The Senate Republicans can now and will now loudly say that the majority has gotten drunk with power. They're stealing the classic prerogatives of the minority party in the Senate. They will say these things. And they'll probably feel them quite sincerely and act on that feeling. So, yes, in the short term, I do expect there'll be a little less comity in the Senate than we were observing. But that's a pretty low baseline, so I don't know how much we will miss as a consequence.
Mitch McConnell points out, hey, a couple years, maybe we run the place, and what you just did pays off for us. Do you think Democrats may regret this in 2 or 4 years?
It's entirely possible. I mean, again, my argument is that it's always been possible for this to happen, but certainly today's actions makes that explicit to everybody. And so, yes, it is entirely possible that, you know, in 2017, if there's a Republican president and Republican majorities in the House and Senate, that they might then say, well, remember when you did this thing and now we're going to just we're going to do even more and eliminate all filibusters on legislation so we can get our agenda through as fast as possible. That is possible. And Democrats right now might anticipate that possibility and say, why should we allow filibusters against legislation now if in the future that right will be taken away from us? So we might as well just get rid of it now.
So the clock's ticking. We might lose control of the Senate. Let's pass as much as we can and just forget that whole filibuster thing as much as we can.
Yeah. Although, I mean, I think the fact that the House of Representatives has a majority of the Republican Party does sort of take away the incentive to eliminate legislative filibustering, because even if the Senate Democrats could get their legislation through the Senate exactly how they want it, it still would just end up sitting at the desk in the House of Representatives. So,
thinking about the long-term historical perspective here, is it wise to make a fundamental procedural change in response to this current crisis? Shouldn't we do this thing in a more deliberative fashion, away from the hurly-burly of daily politics?
No. I mean, I think when the senators observe that their rules just don't work, and they sincerely feel like the interests of the Senate, the interests of the nation would be better served by changing the rules, they should do it then. I mean, the other side of the argument is, oh, we should wait until the beginning of a new Congress. But the problem then is that when you're enacting reforms, you're doing so in anticipation of bad behavior by the other side. And so it's always hard to know exactly how far you ought to go. Like if you knew in January 2009 that the Republicans would fight every comma of the Democratic agenda, then maybe Democratic senators might have been a little bit more ambitious in changing the rules of the Senate then, but they didn't know. And so if your argument is, you know, the only legitimate time to change the rules is at the beginning of a Congress, then you're sort of giving license to bad behavior by everybody else for the next 2 years, and then you don't solve the problem until long after it's been festering.
All right, Gregory, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
That's Gregory Koger. He's Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Miami.
Coming up next, we travel to Wisconsin's Lost City and find out about a neighborhood that never was.
You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network.